So we're continuing our series today called Majoring in the Minor. So we're studying the minor prophets. We're taking the 12 weeks of summer to go through the 12 different minor prophets. And last week we looked at Hosea, and today we're going to be looking at the book of Joel. And we're also going to be having some fun. You know, I made sure to kind of clear that with everybody last week. Like, it's okay to have a little bit of fun in church. And so, you know, we're kind of wearing jerseys. And, you know, please feel free to do that through the summer. We're giving away this Angel Pagan jersey on Labor Day weekend. So that's an authentic jersey we're giving away. And we had some fun stuff last week that we gave. We gave away some Cracker Jacks last week. So today we're going to give out some nachos. All right, so here's some nachos for somebody. So let's see, and I don't pick the seat number, so we're going all the way over here to this section, row number 7. Sorry, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and seat number 8, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So all the way there at the end. So would you pass those down? Congratulations, give her a hand, everybody. So we're having a little bit of fun with that. I had to assure my mom this week. I was talking to my mom on the phone, and I had to assure her that this was not. She saw this picture on Facebook, and she's like, "Greg, a pennant on the pulpit?" I said, "Mom, it's a table. It's not really a pulpit." So that's kind of my excuse, I guess. So anyway. So today we're looking at the book of Joel. Considerably smaller than last week, book of Hosea, 14 chapters. Today just 3. And you can see on our chart, and this is on our Facebook page too, you can check that out, where we're at as far as the timeline. So last week we looked at Hosea, that's the northern kingdom of Israel, about 725 BC. So now we're back considerably, we're in Judah, which is the southern kingdom of Israel. Joel, you see there, about 835 BC. So just kind of right at the beginning of the minor prophets, in the beginning of the slide, you know. So last week when we looked at Hosea, that was kind of like the last gasp, you know, like, okay, this is your last shot, last opportunity for the northern kingdom. Judah, just kind of starting that slide, you know, before they taken into exile a little bit later on. And we can set the stage just a little bit. First, the who, a prophet who did not really speak of himself. You look at verse number 1, the Bible says, "The word of the Lord came to Joel, the son of Pethuel." That's all that is said. It's not like other scriptures and other prophets and other kings and other, you know, significant people in the Bible where you've got kind of this lineage of this person begat, and you can kind of see the family tree, you can see the family line. We don't have that with Joel. He's just a guy that God called. He's Bethuel's son. And it's just a great reminder that it's not about the lineage. It's not necessarily about the family tree. Maybe you're here and you're a 10th, 11th, 12th generation believer. Maybe you're a first generation believer. You know, it's not about the family tree. It's about what God can and will do in your life at this time. He does and can use everyone. That's one of the great blessings we had when we had the Herbert family here that's going down to Honduras. He's working in San Francisco Police Department. She's a per diem nurse for Kaiser down in the Bay Area. God gets a hold of their heart, and, you know, they're off to Honduras. You know, God uses everybody. He can use everybody. He can use you. And so Joel's kind of a great reminder of that. The when, again, kind of at the beginning of kind of what's happening with the downward slide. But the other thing to notice kind of historically, contextually, is it's a time when the kings didn't really matter. There was just a real kind of independent streak that was running through the people at this time, where there really was no loyalty to the king, and certainly that then that transposed to a loyalty to God and a loyalty to his principles. So a time when the kings didn't really matter, it was a real streak of independence. After a season of intense sorrow, and a season of intense sorrow, and we're going to unpack that a little bit. Why so much grief? Why was there so much grief? Why was there so much sorrow in the land at this time? Well, let's take a look at a couple of those reasons. The first one, verses just 2 through 4 of chapter 1. First off, there was historic loss. Historic loss. "Hear this, O you elders. Give ear, all inhabitants of the land. Has such a thing happened in your days or in the days of your fathers? Tell your children of it, and let your children tell their children and their children to another generation. What the cutting locust left, the swarming locust has eaten. What the swarming locust left, the hopping locust has eaten. And what the hopping locust left, the destroying locust has eaten. Has such a thing happened in your days or in the days of your fathers? This was historic. What the people were going through, spiritually, economically, it was unprecedented up until this time. It was historic loss. Some have suggested that it was perhaps a four-year period of absolute devastation because of the locusts that were sent. All right, the locusts. And here's a picture of the locust. Nothing really significant about the locust in and of itself, other than the fact that there were swarms and swarms and swarms of them. Scientists tell us that this particular locust could lay 6,500 eggs in a square mile every 4 weeks. There were locusts everywhere, and they were destroying everything, and the people were not ever able to get a handle on the historic loss that they were experiencing. It was bringing much grief and sorrow to the people. It's also, in my mind, a little bit ironic that God would use a locust to send a message of, hey, wake up, you need to return back to me, because the locust was one of the means by which God delivered his people from the land of Egypt. Do you remember that? God sent the plagues, and one of the plagues of Egypt was the locust, and that was one of the things that God used to deliver the people, and now they're on the other end of it. Now they're on the receiving end of the judgment of God because of their falling away from him and from his principles. So it was historic loss, but it wasn't just historic loss, it was unexpected loss. Verse number 8 says, "Lament like a virgin wearing sackcloth for the bridegroom of her youth." Lament like a virgin wearing sackcloth for the bridegroom of her youth. This idea of, I'm ready, I'm prepared, and he's taken away from me. Suddenly, unexpectedly, the devastating, tragic consequences of that loss brought great, tremendous sorrow to the land. Now, there are lots of different ways that this could be illustrated and unpacked, because all of us have at some point in life experienced some type of unexpected, sudden, tragic, without warning loss. But around this time of year, June, Father's Day, the time we're getting relief from Mexico, I'm always reminded of this young man named Sam Kinney. Go ahead and show that picture up there. There's Sam. There's Sam Kinney and his son Amos. And some of you knew Sam and Laura. Many of you did not. Sam served in the Air Force and was a family that God brought to our church. And they had just been attending our church for probably 3 or 4 Sundays. It had not been very long, but there was just an immediate connection. You know, just an immediate connection with this family. They had little Amos, and what a super blessing he was. And this was taken at church, as at Riverbend School. That's what the black drapes are there in the background. He's wearing his name tag at church. Wonderful family. We headed off for Mexico that next Saturday. So the Saturday after this photo was taken, we headed down to Mexico, and we got to Los Angeles, and I received a phone call from someone in the Air Force letting me know that Sam had been tragically killed. He was on his motorcycle up by Bullard's Bar, wasn't able to navigate a turn, and he lost his life that day. And we made arrangements, and we got the team, together, and we prayed, and we did logistically what we needed to do so the team could go on to Mexico, and then I came back to Yuba City to be here and to be with the family and to minister and support and help with the service that was out at BLA. It was a tragic, tragic time. Sudden, unexpected, tragic loss. I love this next picture. She had this done professionally, Lauren Amos, and a silhouette of Sam, who of course isn't here to watch that little boy grow into the man that God would have him be. And so I share this both as an illustration, but also, again, it's always near to me this time of year to be in prayer for Laura. She's in Missouri. She moved back home to where her family is from, and thankful for Facebook and the opportunity we have to stay connected. She loves this church. She was supportive of our building project and moving over here. And really appreciate this family. So pray for Laura, pray for Amos, pray for this family, and maybe you too can identify with the sudden, unexpected, tragic loss. That's what the people were going through. They were absolutely life-flipped for them, historically and unexpectedly. So three things to take away today, and I said this last week, I'll probably say it again for each one of these. We just can't get to everything. You know, we're gonna glean some principles that I hope are a help. It's not in any way to diminish other parts of the book and other things that the book might be saying, but we want to take some principles from each one of these minor prophets that I hope will be an encouragement and a help to us as we navigate our own lives here in 2016. Number one, you can follow this outline in your bulletin. We're also experimenting with something with our app. If you go to our church app, which you can get on either on your iPhone or your Android, right now it's on the prayer wall. That's not where I want it to be, you know, full time, but I did want to have something up there today. And so you can actually click on the prayer wall and the outline is there. And so we're going to try to make this a little bit more interactive. It's a place where you can make comments, and so maybe we can even have a discussion kind of through the week about the message and different things that, you know, or questions that you might have or different principles that might have been an encouragement or a blessing. So anyway, so you can find the outline on the church app if you're interested in checking that out. So number one, our first point for today, no matter how worried, face the truth. No matter how worried, face the truth. Look at verses 13 and 14 of Joel chapter 1. Put on sackcloth and lament, O priests. Wail, O ministers of the altar. Go in, pass the night in sackcloth, O ministers of my God, because grain offering and drink offering are withheld from the house of your God. Consecrate a fast, call a solemn assembly, gather the elders and all the inhabitants of the land to the house of the Lord your God, and cry out to the Lord. Put on sackcloth and lament. You know, things are not going well. There's not grain, there's not drink. All these things are being withheld. No matter how worried, we have to face the truth. Don't raise your hand, but does anybody else struggle with worry? You know, is that something that's exclusive to me? Worry is something that we all with from time to time. When circumstances don't go the way we want them to go, oftentimes we can become worried. But I want to remind us all today, in facing the truth in that worry, is that God is always working. God is always working. I want you to look at the landscape of your life this morning. Relationally, financially, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, the landscape of your life, God is working in every circumstance of your life. He is always working. He is always working. He has a plan. Even in the midst of our mistakes, I think that's one of the great truths about God, is God is bigger than even the mistakes that we can make. Have you ever made a left turn when you should have made a right? I know I have. God works even in the midst of such circumstances. God is always working. So I want you to think, when you look at the landscape of your life, always remember, God is working. God is working through this circumstance. God is going to show me something. One of the things that we need to do is stop asking this question. We're all guilty of this, so I'm not pointing any fingers at anybody. We need to stop asking the question, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? We need to stop asking that question and start asking this one. What is he trying to teach me? What is he trying to teach me? I'm going through this circumstance. I'm going through this relationship. I'm going through this trial. I'm going through this situation. What is he trying to teach me? Because he is trying to teach you something. He is always working, even in the midst of calamitous, tragic loss and judgment. He says, you got to face the truth. And the truth is, God is working things out in his time, in his way, for his will and glory. Application question. Each one of these have an application question. What is God saying to me right now? What is God teaching you right now? God's speaking. He's speaking. Are we listening? Are we paying attention to what he has for us? No matter how worried, face the truth that God is always working. Number two, no matter how worked up, seek humility. No matter how worked up, seek humility. Chapter number two, drop down to verse number 12, where we read, yet even now, declares the Lord, return to me with all your heart, with fasting, with weeping, and with mourning, and rend your hearts and not your garments. Return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love, Now, really quick, just as an aside, does that sound like the God of the Old Testament that's often depicted in modern day culture and understanding? Look how the God of the Old Testament is described: gracious, merciful, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love. Don't buy into this God of the Old Testament, God of the good New Testament stuff. God is God, and he's always been loving, and he's always been gracious, and he's always been merciful. He's always been steadfast. Verse 14, the end of 13, and he relents over disaster. Who knows whether he will not turn and relent and leave a blessing behind him, a grain offering and a drink offering for the Lord your God. Blow the trumpet in Zion, consecrate a fast, call a solemn assembly, gather the people, consecrate the congregation, assemble the elders, gather the children, even nursing infants. Let the bridegroom leave his room and the bride her chamber. Between the vestibule and the altar, let the priests, the ministers of the Lord, weep and say, spare your people, O Lord, and make not your heritage a reproach, a byword among the nations. Why should they say among the peoples, where is their God? No matter how worked up, we need to seek humility. One of the things that characterizes difficult times is a lack of control. And our lack of control over situations can get us worked up. And when we find ourselves in a situation of being worked up, we need to seek after humility. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you got worked up with something that was out of your control, but there are fewer things that demonstrate the fact that you are not in control as when you were on an airplane. When you're on an airplane, you are not in control. You're doing and going, and wherever the plane is going, that's what's happening with you. And I remember this experience that we had was over 6 years ago when we flew to New York, when we moved to New York. And we flew from Sacramento to Atlanta, and then from Atlanta up to Rochester. And we're flying up to Rochester, and we knew the time was getting ready for us to land. We're watching the time. And we started descending into Rochester, and we're excited. You know, this is our new home. This is our new adventure. This is, you know, all the stuff that, all the, everything just surrounding this trip. And we're descending into Rochester, and all of a sudden we started, and we could hear the landing gear go down. All of a sudden we started ascending. And we're like, okay, this is weird. You know, we're coming down into Rochester, and now we're going back up. And we're all kind of looking at each other like, does anybody know what's going on? What's happening? We're looking at the flight attendants. We're like, you know, do you know what's going on? And of course, they're not saying anything to us. And we start circling. About 30, 45 minutes later, we start descending again. And like, okay, like we're coming. We land, and once the plane lands, Trey reminded me of this after first service, there were all sorts of emergency vehicles on the runway when we landed. And we're like, what is going on? And over the speaker of the airplane, the pilot announced that we had not landed in Rochester, we had landed in Buffalo. Because there was an issue with the plane, and they needed a longer runway because they were concerned that we weren't going to be able to make a safe landing in Rochester. So we landed in Buffalo, and then they put us on buses, and they bused us from Buffalo to Rochester. Here's a shot. Here's our crew on the bus to Rochester from Buffalo. So there's Joshua kind of sporting the faux hawk, you know, like looking really cool. And there's Kayla, are you in here? Yeah, she's like, look how sweet she looks. You know, she's so sweet looking, you know. And then, of course, Gracie, you know, and my wife. So there we are in the bus, you know, heading in. Completely out of control. No control over the situation whatsoever. And it's easy in those situations to get kind of worked up, to get agitated, because we want many times to be in control. And the Bible says that when we get worked up, we need to seek humility. He says in verse number 12, yet even now declares the Lord, return to me with all your heart, with fasting, with weeping, and with mourning. It's not too late to return to the Lord. We heard this last week with Hosea. You're going to hear it today. You're going to hear it all through these minor prophets. Because all these minor prophets are God's messengers to the people. When God sends calamity to the nation, God sends calamity into their lives, and he says, I'm using this as a means to get your attention because I want you to come back to me. And it's not too late to return to the Lord. And I want you to remember that. Some of you are here today, or you know people who say, it's too late. I can't return to the Lord. Hogwash, as my pastor used to say. it's never too late to return to the Lord. Return to him. Return to him now. But I love how he describes it here in verse number 13. Rend your hearts and not your garments. You know, when someone would rend their garments, you know, when they would tear their clothes, it was a visible sign that God was doing something in their life, that God had revealed something to them, and it was visible to other people. He says, I want you to rend your hearts from the visible to others to the visible to God. It's easy for us to rend our garments. It's easy for us to rend something on the outside so that other people will have an impression of us, so other people will know and see what might be happening with us. But he says, don't rend your garments, rend your heart. Rend your heart before me. Completely expose yourself to me and return to me. That's what he wants. That's what he desires. We need to be far more concerned with what God sees than what others see. So many times we have it flipped. And I want to encourage you. He says, now, even now, return to me. To seek it now. You know, he talks about all the people, gathering all the people. He says, gather the people, concentrate the congregation, assemble the elders, gather the children, even the nursing infants. Let the bridegroom leave his room and the bride her chamber. Even that couple that's out on their honeymoon, bring them back in. It's worthy to be interrupted. It's worthy to be impinged upon because we need all the people. There was a sense of urgency. Don't delay. So many times in life, we say, I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm going to get serious about God when I get older, Pastor Greg. When I get married, or when I start having, then I'm going to get serious about my faith. Don't wait. Don't wait for later. He says, now, return now to me. Let me encourage you. Our application question here for number two is, what part of your heart is not fully exposed to God? And of course, this is from our vantage point. Obviously, God sees it all. God sees everything. But what are you trying to hide? What are you trying to keep back? What are you trying to say, God, you can have all this stuff, but this one is mine? What part of your heart is not fully exposed? No matter how worked up we get, we need to seek humility. We need to come, bow, all of us, at his feet. And number three, lastly, no matter how weary, look for God's provision. No matter how weary, look for God's provision. Can you imagine just how wearisome this must have been? The, you know, locusts, wave upon wave upon wave, judgment upon judgment upon judgment. I'm just tired. I'm weary. I'm exhausted. What does he say, starting in verse 19? The Lord answered and said to his people, behold, I am sending you grain, wine, and oil, and you will be satisfied. And I will no more make you a reproach among the nations. I will remove the northerner far from you and drive him into a parched and desolate land, his vanguard into the eastern sea and his rearguard into the western sea. The stench and foul smell of him will rise, for he has done great things. Fear not, O land, be glad and rejoice, for the Lord has done great things. Fear not, you beasts of the field, for the pastures of the wilderness are green. The tree bears its fruit. The fig tree and vine give their full yield. Verse 23, be glad, O children of Zion, and rejoice in the Lord your God, for he has given the early rain for your vindication. He has poured down for you abundant rain, the early and the latter rain as before. The threshing floor shall be full of grain. The vat shall overflow with wine and oil. I will restore to you the years that the swarming locust has eaten, the hopper, the destroyer, and the cutter, my great army, which I sent among you. No matter how weary, look for God's provision. Opposition can be exhausting, can it? It can just be exhausting. It just can take suck all the life out of you. He says, look to me for provision. We see that in relationships. We see it in election cycles. And Liz, I was talking to Gary, was here first service, you know, Gary Bradford. And so, you know, these guys that are, you know, in the thick of it. Exhausting, isn't it? It's exhausting to go through what these people go through when they say, yeah, I'm going to do it. I've been following from a distance. I'm not involved. It doesn't affect me personally, but all the stuff going on with the school district here in Yuba City and the back and forth. And I'm like, and it doesn't even affect me. I'm not even a part of it. And I'm just like, it's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. It's wearisome. Opposition can be that way. But no matter how weary you feel, no matter how weary it gets, look for God's provision, because the Lord can and will do great things. The Lord has done great things. You know, this last week, I'm giving a lot of personal illustrations. I got three really personal illustrations. The first was about, here's the second one, June 1st, this week. And a lot of you have heard this, so I don't mean to trot this out all the time, so I hope that you don't take it that way, but there are several that aren't familiar with our story. And that when we came back from New York back to California, it was on June 1st. On June 1st, 2011, I arrived at the Sacramento International Airport without anything, without a job, without a place to live, without any money, without even my family, because my family had to stay behind because they needed to finish their school year. And I had 23 days. June 24th is when my return trip was going to be to go back to New York to gather my family. And I had 23 days to find a job, to find a place to live, and to find the means to move my family 3,000 miles back to California. It was one of, if not the, lowest times of despair in my entire life. June 1st will always be a date that I tie with a reminder that God is faithful and God provides. Because 5 years later, God's blessed us with a wonderful church family and a wonderful home and wonderful provision. And hindsight's a beautiful thing, right? It's great to look back and see the hand of God, but man, when you're going through it, you're like, "Hello, is anybody there?" I had dedicated my life to the service of God, and on June 1st, I had nothing. The Lord can and will do great things in His time, in His purpose, in His way. I just want to encourage you. I want that story. I don't want that story to be about me. I want that story to be saying that encourages people. Because I've run into so many people the last 5 years, and they just feel like, where is God? And what's going on in my life? And what about this? And what about that? And I'm like, I've been there. God can do great things. But you need to be looking to Him for provision. You're not going to find it in people. People are going to let you down. You're not going to find it in that checking account. You're not going to find it in those stock options. You're not going to find it in those things. It's got to be in Him. He has done great things, and He can and will do them again. Look at these verses again. 25, and let's do the last couple verses. I will restore to you. Some translations say repay to you the years that the swarming locust had eaten, the hopper, the destroyer, the cutter, my great army which I sent among you. You shall eat in plenty and be satisfied. And praise the name of the Lord your God, who has dealt wondrously with you. And my people shall never again be put to shame. You shall know that I am in the midst of Israel, and that I am the Lord your God, and there is none else. And my people shall never again be put to shame. Application question number 3. Where are you looking? Where are you looking? Are you weary today? Are you tired today? Is the opposition great today? Where are you looking for provision? You're not going to find it in substances. You're not going to find it in things. You're not going to find it in money. Sometimes you're not even going to find it in people. Look to God for your provision. He can and will do great things. What stands between disaster and judgment? What stands between disaster and judgment? Let me suggest to you today the person and presence of Jesus. The person and presence of Jesus. The story of the Bible is the story of God reaching to His people. The story of these minor prophets is God reaching to His people. They had walked away from Him. And he's like, okay, I'm going to bring some things into your life. I'm going to bring some things into your existence. I'm going to bring some things into your nation to wake you up and to get your attention so that you will return to me. And we see that today in the person and the presence of Jesus Christ. Final illustration, personal illustration. I had the great privilege this week to stand with my friends, Donna and Bonnie and others, for Donna's son, Greg, who was sentenced in federal court on Friday for misdemeanor that had happened years previously. And he took responsibility for all that he had done. And I would see Greg once every couple of years or so. I'd go down to the Sacramento County Jail, and we'd talk and we'd share. And I always left way more encouraged by him than I'm sure he was by me. You know, we sang a song just a little bit ago, and we sing it regularly around here. You know, he gives and takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. Much easier to sing when you're on this side of the wall. I'm here to tell you, Greg's testimony to me of he gives and he takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord, just rocked me to my core, time and time again. So it was my privilege to go and to identify myself as someone who was there as he stood before the judge to receive his sentence of how long and where he'd be going to prison. And it was emotional. It was emotional. His daughter was there, just graduated high school. And I got to thinking as I was sitting there, because he's standing before the judge and he's with his attorney and the prosecutor's there, what would it have been like? What would it have been like if someone would have burst doors and said, hey, I'm here to take the sentence for Greg. To take the sentence. To take the punishment. Don't judge him. Don't sentence him. Sentence me. He did the crime, but I'm going to do the time. Send him home with his family. Send him home with his mom. Send him home with his daughters. Send him home so he can be a part of Adventure Church, which he so longs to do. Nobody did that. And sentence was pronounced, and he's going to serve the remainder of his term. One day he'll be on the stage. You mark these words. He will be on the stage one day. And you'll be like, I remember when Pastor Greg talked about him. He'll be right here to share his story. Amazing. You know what? That's exactly what Jesus did for us. Exactly what Jesus did for us. We're standing before the judge. We've done the crime. We deserve the time. And Jesus bursts in and he says, let Greg, this Greg, let him go home to his family. Let him be forgiven. Let him be made right with the law. And I will take his sentence. I will take his punishment. That's exactly what Jesus did. What stands between disaster and judgment? It is the person in the presence of Jesus. No matter how worried, face the truth. What is God saying to you right now? No matter how worked up, seek humility. What part of your heart is not fully exposed to God? No matter how weary, look for God's provision. Where are you looking today? You know, as I drove home from Sacramento that day, Friday, I had Air One on, which I typically do, in my car. And this song from Danny Gokey came on the radio. And it's one you've probably heard before. It's called Tell Your Heart to Beat Again. And I thought, this is the message of Joel. This is the message of God's desire to restore us and to renew us and to bring us to a new place. So I want to close this morning with the playing of this song. So guys, go ahead and hit it, and then we'll close in prayer and observe communion together. Check it out. Heads are bowed, eyes are closed. Nobody's looking around. Maybe you're here, you say, Pastor Greg, it's time to tell my heart to beat again. I'm full of worry. I'm all worked up. I'm weary. But I need to be reminded today that God is always working. I need to face the truth that God is always working. I need to seek humility. And I need to be looking for God's provision. If that's you here today and you'd like me to pray for you in this closing time together, nobody's looking around. It's just between you and God. Just lift up your hand really quick so that I can see it. Raise it up, lower it down. Raise it up, lower it down, all over this room. Father, there are folks who are worried, folks who are weary, folks who are worked up. Father, I pray that you would touch them this morning. They would be reminded once again of the work you seek to do in and through them. I pray for my brother Greg today. I pray for his mom. I pray for his daughters. I pray, Father, that you would keep him close in these years you've placed before him. I just pray, Lord, that you would work in our hearts. That always has and continues to be my prayer for this church, for this people, for my life. That there would always be fertile soil. That the seed of the gospel, the seed of hope, the seed of faith would continue to grow and flourish. Father, we're a needy people. We struggle, we fail, we falter, we stumble. We take two steps forward and three steps back. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your love. May we be renewed again today. May your grace and your strength just infuse us with energy and passion and desire to follow after the things of God. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.